You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. We are disrupting aging one show at a time. All of our episodes are available anytime on demand at WPTF.com or wherever you get your favorite podcast. I'm your host, Mike Olander, the State Director of AARP North Carolina. We have a very, very special show for you today, folks. The second of two special episodes focused on our two major political state organizations in North Carolina. Today, Anderson Clayton, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Organization, is with us in the studio to talk about her organization, what they do, and how they do it. But before we get to Anderson, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we always like to begin the program with a little off-the-cuff, informal chit-chat with the true talent of AARP Without Limits, Mike Davis. However, Mike D is not in the house today. We are instead made a new friend today, folks, Kyle Nashheim.
That's correct.
I said it right.
You said it right.
Points for me today, winning already. Wonderful. Kyle, very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you as well. It's a nice, beautiful day outside, actually.
It is a gorgeous day.
Oh, absolutely.
So as folks probably know, you figured out by now, those of you who listen to the show regularly, those of you new listeners, welcome. This is a pre-recorded program. And as we're recording this, it is literally a week to the day before Thanksgiving. When folks hear this, though, we're going to be right in the middle of holiday season, probably about 2 weeks after Thanksgiving when they actually hear this. So, Kyle, I guess we could front and pretend that, you know, Thanksgiving's already happened. We could talk about how was the gravy this year, or did your in-laws bring some of that disgusting fruitcake again this year? But no, we're going to keep it real here. Right now, folks, as we're recording this, it is right before Thanksgiving, which is a bummer because I feel a bit like I'm a bit getting cheated with our audience here right now because Thanksgiving for me, and Kyle, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this. As the years have gone on for me, Thanksgiving has become a more important holiday for me. Where does, in your list, in Kyle's list of holidays, where does Thanksgiving rank for you?
Well, it is very important. It's taken a whole new meaning over the last few years. My father and my grandmother were always the ones making the turkey and the homemade stuff and then all that stuff. We lost them a couple years ago, so now it's been more of a time to remember them and honor them and stuff like that. And so we don't necessarily – we won't be cooking like the turkey or stuff because I've got two brothers who are very picky eaters. They don't like turkey. I don't know. And I mean, I love open-faced turkey sandwiches after Thanksgiving and Christmas, but if I'm still eating them in February, I mean, that just it takes a whole new thing out of that. But it's very important. You know, we get with the family and we just, like, remember them and stuff like that. And then, you know, around Christmas time, we'll get, like – the extended family and stuff like that. So it's very important.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, getting to know you a little bit here for the first time today. It's similar for me. Well, it's also important to me, I'll put it that way, but for different reasons. I'm blessed enough to still have most of my family. I know for holidays, a lot of people, it's a tough time because of the empty seats at the table. We certainly want to acknowledge that. For me, I'll tell you, Thanksgiving has really moved up there for me. And I think it's just because, I don't know, ever since I had kids and started doing like the cooking and stuff, I'm 15 years into that now, so I'm a bit used to it. Nothing like cooking all day just for have the, you know, the kids sit at the table and be done in 7 minutes and be like, okay, can I go now? Like, sure, go ahead. You know, just growing up, you know, the smells in the house, you know, all day long, just like eating and having my nan and my grandpa there and some cousins and or uncles and aunts and stuff there and all that, and just having that day to be able to do it. No, I can't recreate that, but it's nice having our own little piece of it. So it's funny how things change, you know, as you get older and you just sort of appreciate things in a different way. Time with the family is just so, so important, you know. So appreciate you sharing that with us. And those of you who are listening, again, by the time you hear this, it is after Thanksgiving, right in the middle of the holiday season. I'm not going to sing Happy Holidays, but you're hearing that all on the radio for sure here. Curtis Media is, I'm sure, playing that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Here and there. But I do wish everybody a wonderful holiday season, and I hope that 2026 brings for you and your families everything that you wish it to be. So, all that said, Kyle, looking forward to always, well, we always like having Mike D here, but looking forward to seeing you again here around the studio.
Absolutely.
From time to time. So, as I mentioned at the start of the show, this is the second installment of a special two-part series focused on the state Republican and Democratic organizations. And to make this experience one that is fair to both organizations, I prepared identical questions for each guest, which they both received in advance. We've asked each guest to refrain from political attacks or jabs, campaign messages, or endorsements. Also, these two shows will not be made public and posted until both are recorded, so we'll avoid any retorts or back and forths based on which show aired first. And our goal here is simple, folks, to let the public better understand these state organizations that lead the political parties in the state, and all walking away with a better understanding. In our previous show, we recorded with Jason Simmons, who is the chairman of the North Carolina State GOP. Today, we have with us Anderson Clayton, who is the chair of the North Carolina Democratic Organization. She serves as currently as the Democratic Party chair, elected at 25 years old. Clayton is the youngest chair of a state Democratic Party. Chair Clayton grew up in Roxboro, North Carolina, and graduated from Appalachian State University. She worked on Congresswoman Kathy Manning's congressional campaign in Iowa as a field organizer for the presidential campaigns of Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, and then the Senate campaign of Amy McGrath. Prior to her election as chair of North Carolina Democratic Party, Chair Clayton served as chair of the Person County Democratic Party, her hometown county. She currently lives in Roxboro. Anderson, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
So good for you to be here. And I know you just got back from some traveling. I know you were in D.C., but before that, did I hear correctly, 50-city rural tour around the state?
Oh, yeah. This summer we hit the road. Every year we go out to all 100 counties in the state as the Democratic Party. I think that it's important for us to be communicating with people all over North Carolina, especially the ones that are maybe 3 to 5 hours away from where we're sitting right now in this major metropolis of Raleigh, North Carolina. But yeah, we had a good time.
Good. Well, I'm going to ask you more about that for sure. Definitely interested in what the day in the life of a state party chair looks like. But as part of our introduction here, I just mentioned a bit of your bio. So if we could just start there. Tell us a bit about yourself and how did you land into your current role?
Look, I was sitting there. I was staring at Kyle, and I was saying, "Man, Mike is from New Jersey up here talking about Appalachian State. I don't know where that is in North Carolina. I'll be real with y'all. Appalachian State is where I went to college, and so go Nears, roll Nears in every way, shape, and form. But I grew up in Roxboro, and I think that the last thing I would have ever thought I'd see myself doing was probably politics when I was growing up there. But I always wanted to be Anderson Cooper instead of Anderson Clayton. Mm. So the idea that to go into journalism and to tell stories and, you know, the two things that they tell you not to talk about at a dinner table when you grow up in rural North Carolina is religion and politics. And so I thought that the ways to see myself in life were a little bit more on the side of how do I tell what's happening in communities right now. And I learned that in high school from a great journalism teacher named Phyllis Boatwright, honestly.
Hmm. Interesting. I love the line about Anderson Cooper. Great series he does on grief, too, by the way. Mm-hmm. His programming.
No, I told him, I wrote him a letter. I said, look, I can just take over your show. AC360. You didn't have to rename it or anything. You know, train me up. I'm ready.
Oh, that's good. So most people don't follow politics closely, nearly as closely as we do, and they have very little understanding of the structure of the Republican and Democratic parties. So tell us, what is the state Democratic Party? How is it structured? What exactly does it do?
I mean, it varies from chair to chair, and I think as you would, you could tell with any organization or business, it's only as good as the people that make it up at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so the North Carolina Democratic Party, I'm elected by a group of about 600 or so people across the state of North Carolina that are elected from their county organizations, their county Democratic parties in their state or in their areas. And across the state, it ends up being about 640 people, give or take. And it is a body that we call the State Executive Committee that elects me to this job. And so every 2 years, I go through a reelection campaign. And up until 2024, this was a stipended job. So it wasn't a paid full-time position for somebody to be in. And we changed that and made it so that somebody could be a full-time development director, essentially, for the Democratic Party in North Carolina, which is what I see myself as, a fundraiser and somebody that is a messenger in a lot of ways for the issues that are going on across the state right now. And that has looked like making it so that we are the third largest state party in the entire country for the Democrats. And so you have Wisconsin, Michigan, and North Carolina for the amount of staff that we have right now. It's about a 25-person staff that's full-time, good health care and benefits, and making sure that we are putting people all over North Carolina to emphasize Democratic infrastructure across the state and to build it across the state, too.
Well, thank you for that. Now, what do you think, when people think about what the state Democratic Party is, what do they misunderstand the most about what the state party does and how it fits into us? And what can you help us better understand today about the structure or how influential it is? Or
yeah, I mean, I think a political party has a lot of emphasis on I think it's important for a political party to figure out how do you make it easier for people to run for office. And when I got in this job, right, I came in from North Carolina Democrats had left 44 state legislative seats uncontested in 2022. That meant 3 million people across the state didn't have somebody to vote for. And that was because we have gerrymandered maps right now that, you know, typically, and this is not a partisan thing necessarily, right? It's just the fact that it is, you know, there are predetermined races in North Carolina at this moment. And that is because of how the state House and Senate maps are drawn. And what that's looked like is a lot of times Democrats not competing in areas that traditionally look like the places where I grew up. And so it meant that I wanted to take on a job of trying to make sure that this party was heard across the state, not just in areas where Democrats could typically win elections. And so that meant making sure we contested all 170 legislative seats. And in 2024, we came back from the 44 seat deficit that we had in 2022, and we filled all seats but two that we ended up having unaffiliated candidates run in. And so no Republican went uncontested in 24. And to me, that's a good thing because I'm pro-competition. I want people across the state to have to fight to win your right or your a vote in every sense and be able to go and represent you in Raleigh right now.
And the more engaged public we have, the better decisions, hopefully, we have getting made on their behalf and so forth.
Misconceptions, though, that I have a direct line to Hakeem Jeffries or Chuck Schumer right now.
I
do think that that is where I'm like, look, no, and respect to him. And I also think that a lot of people think the Democratic Party is one person. And I'm like, no, the party is a group of people that wear that label right now and the people across the state that choose to. And so I think this party can be whatever we decide to make it.
Okay, very good. When we return from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Anderson Clayton. This is AARP Without Limits. We will be right back.
AARP is working hard to make sure people in North Carolina are getting the most out of life. Whether it's helping you stay healthy, save more money, care for loved ones, or simply have some fun, AARP is making a difference in communities across the state. You have a wise friend and fierce defender with AARP. Learn more about progress being made for older adults in the state by listening to AARP Without Limits. You can find the latest episodes of AARP Without Limits wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, that we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, a recommendation, or a suggestion for a future guest or topic, please send me an email, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. We've been speaking today with Anderson Clayton. She is the chair of the North Carolina Democratic Organization, and we've been talking a bit about the structure of the organization and what it does. I do want to dip back into you a little bit, Anderson. What does the typical day look like, if there even is such a thing, being in your position?
I mean, I don't think any day is normally the same, but I think there are a lot of how I spend my time is more so what I think is the way to ask that question, right? It's like 75% of my time is spent fundraising and doing interviews and doing meetings, basically, that's trying to make sure that the organization that we have is alive. Like, I consider it, when I got in this job in 2023, North Carolina Dems maybe had 7 to 8 full-time staffers that were there and that stayed on consistently. That organization is now a 25-person organization. Mm. And so when you're looking at how fast that, and I consider it sort of like a startup in some ways right now too, the fact of how fast that's grown, it takes a lot to be able to manage that and also be able to fund that every single year. And I think that the best thing that we could do is have hired people from the state of North Carolina who know it and who are able to organize it. And that's what we saw with the municipal elections that we had this last year, where we saw incredible people across all of the cities and the municipalities where we had them in really have good people that got elected to it. And it's because they had infrastructural support from the state party that I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. And traveling is a regular part of your sort of week to week.
If you are anybody that does fundraising for a job, if you're part of a nonprofit, you do development, or you are a small business or a startup, somebody that's looking for investors, you know that if somebody is willing to give you a sum of some sort, you're willing to hop on a plane to go find it. And that has sort of been my MO, is that I'm willing to go anywhere and make sure that I'm talking to people about North Carolina, because I know it's gonna take everybody. And actually, it's funny, Justice Earle, she has this really cool quote. She's one of our Supreme Court justices right now, and she said that when she was from an era of the civil rights movement where people all over the country dug into their own pockets to be able to help free the South. And I always think about that whenever I'm going to places like California and New York and asking them to be able to help support what we're doing in North Carolina right now, because we have a lot of power to give back to the nation, I think.
So when you are out in the field, how does your organization engage with voters to get a better sense of what issues are important to them and you know, what are their needs?
I mean, it's twofold, right? So there's the traditional ways of canvassing and door knocking, and I came up through being a field rat, and so which is what they call folks that work in field on campaigns. And so it's the approach of that everybody is somebody worth talking to, and I want to know how somebody feels about an issue. And polling can only tell you so much right now when it's a sample size of 50 or 1,000 people. And I think that what we've been able to do with a 7-person organizing team is we knocked over 250,000 doors in the year of 2025 alone. And we were able to talk to people all over the state about what were the issues that they were dealing with, what concerns that they had about their communities. And it ended up being able to give us, I think, the best data that we need to go into 26 and talk to people about midterm elections and the issues that are impacting their backyard.
Mm-hmm. And with what you hear out in the field, how does that get incorporated or turned into the party platform? Is it something that comes from the ground up through the state organization, or is it something more top-down or a mix of both?
I got the most Democratic party platform you've ever seen, and you can tell that by going to both political party websites and looking at each of them if you'd like to for a moment. But it is interesting, because anybody across the state, as long as you've got a D beside your name, you can bring something to be part of our party platform and bring it to your local county party meeting and be able to pass it up through, and it'll go to the state level, and we have a resolutions and platform process. Mm-hmm. So that is the official side to it, I would say, within the party structure. I think that what you're talking about, though, is that the issues that people typically tend to run on as candidates right now, and for me, a lot of that comes from what folks hear when they're going around the state. And so this summer, like I said, we did that 55 county rural tour, and a lot of what I heard people talk about was healthcare access. Mm-hmm. And it was people that were worried about losing it, folks that were worried about affording it, and the ability to, especially in rural North Carolina right now, the problems that we're seeing with healthcare deserts. And I think that, you know, it was one of the most salient issues that I heard people talk the most about.
Okay. North Carolina is one of the fastest aging states in the country, too. How do you guys learn about the needs of older voters in particular?
I mean, honestly, the joke that I would say, or that people would give our party right now, is that it is an older party in some aspects. Mm-hmm. So we represent a lot of the people that are typically above the age of 60 or 65 at this moment in time. But I joke, the tour that I did, majority of people that did come out to it were older folks. And I think that right now it's because they are, North Carolina, to your point, it is the oldest or fastest aging state in the country, but also it's the third fastest growing state in the country. And so we have a lot of retirees that are moving to North Carolina, looking at places from New York, up from Florida, over from Pennsylvania. 52% of our state right now are transplants. They don't know what they're moving into in some ways, or the history of the state. And so for me, it's just been interesting to go around as somebody who's lived here their whole life, and like their families lived here their whole life, to be like, oh, there's a lot of people who know nothing about North Carolina who are now here that,
or pronounce Appalachia by saying Appalachia.
I'm looking at you in that sense too. Yes, I mean, Mike, that you gave yourself away on that one. But I mean, I think it's just interesting, right, to learn that about a lot of people and sort of understand that that's sort of the framing too that you have to educate folks through, is that not everybody understands the history of what this state has gone through when it comes to both education and healthcare.
Mm-hmm. This question might be difficult to answer, and it's okay if you don't have an answer, because we at ARP struggle to figure this out too. But there is definitely, I think, unfortunately, a growing generational divide, a line between younger Americans and older Americans. We're seeing that a lot even now in like social media and stuff now too, where, you know, we know that for the first time, there's a generation of people who truly don't believe they're going to be off as well as their parents, and a lot of caste being blamed on boomers and saying, oh, you guys have so much of the wealth and have, you know, a Social Security program that's still going to be there for you and blah, 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 blah. And for us, we're not going to have that. What role do you think politics and the state party can play in helping to bridge that? And to avoid that sort of one generation against another, because it does prevent us from being able to resolve the issues. We want the next generations coming up to have the security of Social Security, to know that despite, you know, whatever the whims are of the market, Social Security is going to be there just like it has been for 90 years, paying out every single month. And the younger generations deserve that, just as my parents' generation and all of them before. So what's your take on that?
I mean, then we've got to make sure that it is, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to put forth the policy positions to make sure that people know the social safety net's not going anywhere and that it will be there for you. And I think that every day those are the type of people that you elect to office help determine that. And for me right now, I think it is so important, as somebody that grew up basically hearing the fallacy, I would say, of that, you know, you'll pay into Social Security your whole life and it'll never be there for you. And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, let's tell people, actually, that's a lie. It will be. And especially if we make it so. And I think that we have to start talking about it like that, because it has been a propaganda machine, in my opinion, that has come out and told a younger generation that. And I'm honestly, I'm sitting here looking at Kyle too, because he seems young. I don't know how old you are, but I'm like, I think that in general, I heard that my entire life. Like, mm-hmm. and I just think the misinformation that's been spread about the social safety nets right now is damaging to our society and to people being better off than they were without it in so many ways. So mm-hmm. we just have to make sure it is.
So focusing on those policy solutions to help ensure that it's more of a, we're not seeing a drastic change in the programs as another generation comes
on. Look, I'm a fan of, let's make politics boring again. I would love for us not to have to, you know, turn on the news every day and be frightened about what you're going to see or what's going to be destroyed next. And I think that we need people who want to go to office to be, it used to be called public service, right? Public service ain't fun. It ain't glorious. It's got nothing to be honest with you, great about it. You don't get thanked for it most times either, but you do it because you were called to do it. It's sort of like being a teacher or a preacher, in my personal opinion too. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be called to want to be a public servant. And I think that we need more people answering the call who actually care about serving people at the end of the day, because those are the policy decisions that I care about somebody in this party or in this state, even regardless of political party, doing, to be truthful. Mm-hmm.
So we had this situation recently. We've had some moments in our state where, you know, we've got a nearly veto-proof Republican-controlled state legislature, a Democratic governor, and they've been able to get some things done. And we see some moments too in Congress where there are these moments of bipartisanship where things are actually able to get done. What issues do you think may provide the best opportunity for your party to work across the aisle and get stuff done? And it's probably not, like you said, probably the boring stuff, not the sexy stuff that, you know, gets spoken about on podcasts or on cable news. But what do you think of that?
No, I actually think we've heard a lot about it lately. I think we end gerrymandering and you get bipartisanship all over the place, actually. Mm. It goes back to what I talked about. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you want to end the whole concept of that there's extremism on both sides of a political party, you give people competitive elections. Like, if you give people something to fight for, you know, you oftentimes go to the middle because you have to win the center to be able to win the conversation or the fight. And I think right now we have too many people that have been able to dig in their heels so hard and so fast because they haven't had to work with the other side. And that is a part of a system, right, that is set up to work against the voters right now in the state of North Carolina and against holding elected officials accountable. And so for me, ending partisan and racial gerrymandering in a state like North Carolina, you're going to start to see bipartisanship all over the state again, because I don't believe that we've seen that throughout our state in the last decade of it, to be truthful with you.
That's an interesting point. I take your point clearly, because there's incentives for both sides there, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, predetermined elections, like, Democrats also don't want to lose their seats. I'm calling out my own people with this, too, and which what Republicans would normally say, right? They'd be like, well, Democrats did it in the 90s, and I was like, yeah, probably shouldn't have been doing it then either, in my personal opinion, but different day and age of our party in some sense, you know?
So how can people learn more about the State Dems, social media, etc.?
Yeah, please go to ncdp.org. If the one thing that I leave you all here with today is that, you know, there are about 80,000 people in North Carolina, Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliateds, who are having their voter registrations challenged right now in the state. So if you do one thing after hearing this podcast and you go to ncsbe.gov and you check and see if your name, anybody that you care about, or any of your friends and family are on the list for registration repair, and make sure that your right to vote is not challenged in 2026, because every single person deserves that opportunity, regardless of what political party you're a part of.
All right. Any final words to leave us with? Really appreciate you being on the show, especially just getting off a plane from D.C. yesterday. Oh, no, you drove.
I did, yes.
Wow.
I was in an F-250. I was in a diesel truck going into D.C. So
saw
y'all,
you pull up in that.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, y'all pray for me in the big city, all right? but no, it was a good time. And just get out and register to vote. Please make sure that you do.
All right. Anderson Clayton, thanks so much for being on the show. We really, really appreciate it. That is a wrap, folks. Really, really appreciate Anderson being on the show today. Thank you. Thank you to Kyle Nashheim for guest producing today. Thank you to Mike Davis for post-production. And, of course, thank you for listening. I'm Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. This has been AARP Without Limits, and we will see you next time.